Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon to all my blessed beloveds out there in Radio Land. It's Living and Thriving time with me, yes, Rusty. And it's Humpty Hump Day. And, you know, it's been an exciting week so far. Chloe and I have had 3 days of no alarm days, meaning we don't have to set the alarm. Why, you ask? Oh, gosh, because there's this crazy snowstorm that came and scooped up the streets. And, well, we have like 9-foot walls around our apartment building that we're currently residing in. And it's crazy. I think Juneau made up for all the snow that we did not receive this winter. So I'm a little disappointed because I'm not a huge fan of snow at all. I don't like the cold. I don't like snow. Want nothing to do with it. Y'all that like it, keep it. That's great. But unfortunately, I'm going to have to be here for a while. So don't forget the excitement that's coming up. I mean, I've got 5 books, not one, not two, not three, but 5 books that are all being published in the next 120 days. And it's crazy mayhem. And they're all coming. They're en route right now, and I will be speaking in Boca Raton on the 22nd, so come on down. Come visit me. I can guarantee I'm going to be wearing some flip-flops. I'm telling you, those toes, getting the pedicure, flip-flops, hell yeah. I'm so tired of this cold. Chloe's already packed. She has her snorkel on. She's been wearing it all week because she is ready for the sunshine, too. She is tired of the snow. Poor Bella's going to have to kick back and hang out with some friends up here while we're gone. But, you know, life is an adventure, and you might as well write about it. So I'm totally excited about that. So I hope to see you all in Boca Raton. Now, I have a really exciting guest on, and I'm really looking forward to really getting to know Miss Kelly Tonelli. She's a clinical psychologist. She's from Michigan, so she knows my aches and pains and sore back from all that shoveling that we've had to do, because we got almost 24 inches here, folks. And this was not chump change. It wasn't like a 1 or 2 inch thing. But she was smart, and she moved out to California, and now she is indulging in that flip-flop weather, so she can totally appreciate my desire to hurry up and get to Florida, where I live, love, and belong, and stay in the warmth. All right, Miss Kelly, you are live here at Living and Thriving. How are you? Good morning.
Good morning. Oh, I heard about all the snow you got out there.
I know. Snowmageddon. The jokes are running wild, but, you know.
I won't complain about the fact that we think it's cold here right now, and it's 65.
Yeah, I know.
We'll take 65. And sweaters, and yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the no shaving your legs time of year here in New England, because you just don't bother.
See, and you can't get away with that in California. You have to shave your legs all year round.
I know. I you know, I'm willing to take that sacrifice for the team.
It's definitely worth it. I moved out here for a reason.
Yeah, I don't blame you. So tell us a little bit of who you are and what you do.
Well, I, like you said, I'm a psychologist, so I work in private practice. I see people, you know, 5 days a week. I'm an author. I wrote a book called Life Lessons for the Teenage Girl. And then I think most importantly, I'm also a mom and a wife.
All right. And you have a daughter who is a danceaholic, too, like mine. We have dance class tonight, and I'm sitting here going, I'm wondering if they're open.
Yes, my daughter loves dancing. So that's pretty much what, if she's not in school, that's where she can find her. She'll be at the dance studio.
Yep, very cool. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, why a clinical psychologist and not like a hairstylist or a beautician or, you know, window cleaner. What's your inspiration to do what you do?
You know, it's kind of funny. You're going to find out I have a very cool mom. When I was about 8 years old, I got this bug up my butt about whether I wanted to be a psychologist or a psychiatrist. Now, I don't know how at 8 years old I even knew what either of those really were, but I had decided it was going to be one or the other, but I couldn't choose. So what my mom did, well, this is before the internet was accessible to everybody, is we made up a survey of all of these questions that I would want to ask people in these professions. You know, where did you go to college? What's the best part about your job? What don't you like about your job? Those kinds of things. And we looked up addresses in the Yellow Pages. They existed still back then. And mailed them to a bunch of psychologists and psychiatrists in my local community. The amazing thing is most of them filled them out and mailed them back to me. And based
that's
on
great.
Those and what their responses were, I was like, okay, psychology, that's what I want to do.
Very cool. So, you know, as you just have always wanted to be a psychologist, but what is it? How interesting is that? Because most of us, you know, I was blowing up frogs, playing in mud puddles, just, you know, building forts, running my BMX through every possible thick, bushy kind of substance in Florida that I could. I don't think I really, I knew I wanted to help people, but I don't think I was that finite about it. I knew that my calling was to help, but then I was like, oh, I'm going to be a doctor. No, maybe I'll be a lawyer, or maybe I'll be, you know, I flip-flopped back and forth, so it's really interesting to hear that you were very finite about your chosen path.
You know, I was. There were deviations that happened. You know, there was a brief period in, I want to say, like, middle school, early high school, where I was like, oh, no, I want to be a neonatal surgeon or something like that, or I went into college as an accounting major because by the time it came time to apply to college, the idea of having to go for 10 years was overwhelming because to be a psychologist, it's 10 years.
Right.
And that was overwhelming. The idea of committing to that scared me to death. So I applied to school. I went to Michigan State as an accounting major. I got through 2 semesters of it. My grades were, they were okay, but I wasn't loving it. I had
right.
a vision of myself sitting in a really tiny little cubicle with like an abacus all by myself, never interacting with any person, which I know accounting is not necessarily like that, but that was my fear. So I went and talked to one of the guidance counselors at the college and kind of said, I don't like what I'm doing. What do I do? And they said, well, okay, well, what do you want to do? And it dawned on me, okay, I need to go back to psychology. I'm going to have to commit to 10 years of college. And so
right.
it went back from there.
Interesting. What is your book about?
Well, you know, I see a lot of teenage girls in my practice, teenage girls, young women. And what I was finding is that they were kind of lost. I remember feeling lost myself at that age because adults couldn't necessarily be trusted or relied upon because they felt so old and they couldn't understand. And so I really didn't look to them to tell me, you know, to give me advice. But then my friends, unfortunately, though well-intentioned, didn't often have much more experience or insight than I did. So the girls in my practice, what they were doing is they were looking to celebrities. So they would come in and tell me that they had read such and such about this person or about that person and then making basically huge life decisions based on what the celebrity said. Well, the problem is what was reported on social media and in the media in general was a lot of like how to get the guy, how to lose weight, you know, a lot of things about not being good enough and about physical appearance, but there wasn't a lot of substance. So I had this idea, what if I could contact these famous women, these role models, and have them give some advice that actually mattered, you know, talk to
right.
them about career and future and goals and finances and anything, relationships. And then I could build on that advice with actual sound psychological principles and give kind of exercises and activities to work on things like self-esteem and things like that. But maybe they would be more willing to hear it from me if it was coming also with the advice of someone that they already trusted because they felt like they knew them.
Very cool. And where this is a great place for you to shamelessly promote yourself.
Well, thank you. You know, it's Barnes & Noble, Amazon. It's pretty much everywhere and anywhere someone wants to go get it. They've done a pretty wide release on it. It just came out in November. So it's Life Lessons for the Teenage Girl. Anybody can contact me directly if they'd like to. That's at Dr_Tinelli on Twitter. Or through my blog, which is psychobabblechat.com, I'd be more than happy to direct anyone who needed help finding a copy.
Very cool, very cool. What is your hopes and inspirations for the next your next adventure? What are you driving for or towards?
Well, and as you mentioned, I've got a daughter. She's only 9, so she really felt kind of left out by this book. This book is not meant for 9-year-olds. It's really
right.
meant for kind of more of the 14-year-old and up crowd. The material is more written to them, and the content is geared toward them. So she looked at me when I was in the middle of this book and said, well, why are you writing a book that's not for me? I said, well, this is who the idea was for. This is where the idea came from. And she looked at me and said, well, what about me? So that's the next project. I've already got a bunch of amazing women on board to help with that one. Still working on that one because the publicity for this one takes up so much time. So, but the next one will be the advice book for tween girls.
And what kinds of advice do you think that you'll be able to give? I have a 9-year-old as well, and she gives me more advice than I think I can give her. Very wise for her year. But
isn't that amazing?
What kind of,
I agree.
Well, and I think it's partially it's because of what she's influenced by. You know, she listens to my radio shows. She reads my books. She's very much a part of my career. And I'm very open about that. And she gets to meet great people, rabbis and monks and priests. And so she has a wide range of tools that most kids, I don't think, are able to have. So I think that makes
mm-hmm.
her very wise. And I don't know how I would be able to write a book that would inspire her more than that.
Well, and a lot of times it depends on what material I'm given. I do not direct the people who contribute to the book. I don't tell them, oh, you tell me about this or you write about that, because I really
mm-hmm.
want it to be what inspires them as well. But I think even the wisest of 9-year-olds kind of could use assistance in how to navigate relationships with peers, with the beginning of, you know, romantic relationships that are coming in the next 5 years or so. With navigating, how do I balance school and hobbies and interests and activities? How do I keep my self-esteem based on my opinion of myself and not on these external factors, which is so common in that tween teen years? There's so much
right.
that they can learn from those of us who've gone before them, and they can learn from our mistakes. They'll repeat a few of them, of course. They have to. It's part of the process. But there's oftentimes even just a comfort in knowing that I'm not the only one who's gone through this. So even if by reading something in a book, it doesn't prevent them experiencing pain, they can at least have the comfort of knowing I'm not the only one this happened to, and they made it through the other side.
And I think this year has really been a powerful year, especially in the adult world. I'm very fortunate to have been invited to co-author inspirational books on women. Women from all over the world actually have written and co-authored in these books. And it's all about inspiration and kind of authentic beauty and trust and really delving into the truth of life versus the drama and the make-believe TV lifestyles. And I think that we're really, as a society, starting to curve in one of two directions. One direction is definitely sticking with that whole vanity, shallow side of things. And the other direction is really, you know, taking off the 9-inch heels, which, quite frankly, I don't know if I'd ever do, but and just digging in the dirt and being, you know, a little bit more earthy, a little bit more balanced, a little bit more real in our approaches to our everyday life. And what I'm interested in seeing is what our daughters are going to be like, because you and I are much more outspoken than our parents were, I'm sure, much more
mm-hmm.
driven to have an authentic lifestyle without, you know, there's generations of keeping up with the Joneses mentality. I think it's going to be really exciting to see how our girls bloom in this kind of transitional time frame. What are your thoughts?
Well, and I agree completely. And what I really want for my daughter, I think the key word you said is all about balance. I want her to be the kid who can be, as a young woman, as an older woman, as a child, whatever it is, to be the person who can be digging in the dirt and, you know, being there with the earth and being active and being energized by all of that. But at the same time, to be able to go, okay, and now I feel like being this today. I'm going to go to an event, I'm going to do whatever, and I can put on my Nine Inch Heels, but I'm not doing it because someone told me I have to. I'm doing it because I chose to. I like them, I want to wear them, whatever it is, and knowing that the next day she can kick them off and put on her flip-flops. I want her to be able to have the fluidity to transition between those roles, not to feel, as I think many people had, especially generations before us, where they had to choose one or the other. You were earthy, or you were, you know, vain, or you were dressed up, or you were super casual. No, there's no reason that you can't be all of those things.
And I agree, and I think that's what's really, really exciting about watching more and more women write books, more and more women like you inspire and encourage the youth to kind of see life in a different perspective, because they're really inundated with a lot of negativity and a lot of bullying and a lot of judgments and a lot of TV nonsense. You know, I was talking to a young lady the other day, and I'll be 390 next month. And she's, you know, 22 years old, and I love her to death, sweet girl, but she's like, I was talking about how we never had cell phones when I was a kid. I mean, we actually had to, you know, pass notes in class, Lord, and get in trouble for that. And she goes, oh my gosh, I spent most of my middle school taking selfies and, you know, texting at 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'm sitting here going, Didn't you, you know, skin your knees on a bicycle? Didn't you go roller skating? Like, well, you know, so there's this huge gap difference. So I try to raise my daughter where she has the ability for that technology, but she also has the gift of being self-sufficient without it. And I find it a very interesting time period, especially for my generation, because we're watching these virtual kids grow up, and we were not virtual at all, you know? And I think that's a lot of pressure.
And I think that happens in any generation where there's these kind of technological leaps. You know, our parents grew up with one black and white TV in the living room that the family would sit around, or perhaps even radio, you know, if they're old enough, that the family would sit around and share an hour of listening or watching, and that was kind of it. And then my childhood, there were multiple TVs in the house. And we might have even had a computer or a gaming system or something like that. And so each generation kind of has these technological leaps that happen. Now, the big thing, though, is that our kids have this technological leap that doesn't require them to interact at all. So they can, if you see them sometimes, be sitting in a room together, and it's almost like parallel play has reoccurred. They're all sitting together, spending time together, kind of, but they're individually on a cell phone. And they might even be texting each other, even though they're sitting right next to each other, but there's not a lot of eye contact. There's not a lot of interaction. There's no body language going on. And so, you know, my concern is that they're going to lose those skills if we don't force them to kind of have normal face-to-face interactions on occasions without technology.
Well, and to further that, for those of us who are really nerdy, I mean, we have these things called mirror neurons, and those neurons only develop and get excited and happy in our brain if we use them. So if we're not able to mimic and utilize that innate ability that we have to pick up and sense, I really would be very frightened about our species, you know, because that would just change our basic instinct.
Well, those kind of social relationships are one of those things that if you don't use it, you lose it. You kind of have to learn how to read other people's facial expressions. You have to learn how to interact and to know when to pause in a conversation and, you know, when someone is done talking and things like that. And when you're texting, you don't have to. You just wait until they hit send. And then you go, my turn. And then you hit send. And then, oh, my turn. So it's just a different style of interacting.
Hashtag.
Right. Oh, yeah, use an emoji so that you don't even have to read facial expressions. You're like, oh, you sent me a smiley face. We're okay. You sent me a frowny face. You're mad at me. And that's true. And I think that's something teenagers, the social media pressures on teenagers is immense. they're living their lives, if they're fully engrossed in social media, kind of on a worldwide stage. Every mistake they make is shared. Every picture they take is shared. When we did something stupid as teenagers, only the people who were there and only the people they could physically tell would know about it. That was bad enough. But when you do something and then it can become a viral sensation, it's just so much pressure.
Well, and I think beyond that, it's also desensitizing our youth. I think we're really becoming less, and I don't want to use the word moral, but that's probably the closest word that I can come up with, but less self-respect. I mean, there's all these programs like Snapchat and things like that, and they'll send a picture that's not appropriate, and it disappears within a minute. And they think that's okay. Well, what they don't realize is when you do that, I can actually take my phone and take a screenshot of the picture
Absolutely.
That you think is going to disappear, and then I can put it on Facebook. And I have, in my social media world, I have over 75,000 people who have friends too.
Exactly.
So,
and each of them could easily send it to people who don't know you. And I mean, do you remember that hair care commercial or something like from forever ago? It was like, and they tell to four friends, and they tell four friends, and it was showing
right.
this, you know, how one piece of information could have been shared with thousands of people. Now it's so easy. All one person does is hit send, and it's gone.
Yep. And so I think there's a little bit of
looking for jobs and college applications and all of these things, and all you have to do is Google somebody, and you're like, whoa. Okay, not that person.
Well, and I think it's also desensitizing them to what is, you know, and I'm not square by any means, but I think there's a certain self-respect that we should all have, you know, being honest and authentic
Definitely.
To ourselves and not not forgetting that you are value. You have value. And I think a lot of these behaviors and activities, the hedonist stuff, and I totally get it. I'm human. But I have self-worth. I have self-value. And I am, I guess I'm old, huh? Does that make me old?
Well, and if you think about it, though, our brains are not fully formed until we're in our early 20s, as far as kind of our capacity to think through decisions and not to be as impulsive. I swear some people are probably in their 50s. But if we're talking in general, it's our
20s. I was going to say, I don't think my brain's fully developed yet.
I understand. But when you put that kind of, you know, power to share information in the hands of someone who is not fully formed and is impulsive and doesn't necessarily think through their actions entirely before they do something, they're like, oh, this is funny. I'm going to send it. And then they don't think about the fact of, oh, wait, will this still be funny tomorrow, next week, next year? Because it's still going to be out there.
Right.
And is it appropriate is a whole other level. You know, oh, look, I'm, you know, doing this. I'm sick of the sexy duck face that I keep seeing pictures of.
Oh, my God.
The girls with the lips and the whole thing.
Yeah. We're good.
But, you know, I keep seeing them. It's kind of like these squished together cleavage shots with the duck face. And it's not 30-year-old women who are doing this. It's 15-year-old girls. And it's,
I know, the
it's
cougars
unfortunate
didn't play.
That
cougars don't play there.
Yeah, no, the cougars are like, oh, man, you know, we don't need to do that. You know, if you feel like you're sexy and you feel like a sexy woman in your own right, you don't have to do that pose. It's young.
Right.
It's insecure. It's that, you know, I'm trying to fight for being sexy because I'm 15 kind of person who does that.
I don't even know what it means. Like, how does a smushed up face with, you know, scooting up your sisters make any kind of, it looks plain old dumb, period. I can't be any more blunt about
15,
it.
Right. Somehow at 15, you're like, wow, I look great. But I don't know, maybe 15-year-old boys really dig it. I don't know what it is, but.
I don't know. We are running out of time, and as much as this has been pleasurable, and hopefully we'll do it again sometime in the future, I would really love to ask you two things. One,
okay,
what do you hope that everybody gets out of today's show? And two, selfishly, shamelessly, enjoy promoting yourself. You got about 3 minutes.
Okay. Well, what I hope they get out of this is that the idea that we can always learn from other people, that no matter how old we are, no matter how much we think we know and how much we've experienced in life, there is always more to learn. So the importance of being open to learning. Selfishly promoting the book is Life Lessons for the Teenage Girl. It's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and everywhere. People can contact me through Twitter, and that's @Dr_Tinelli, or through my blog, which is psychobabblechat.com. And I would love to hear anyone's thoughts on the book, or if they have suggestions for the next book or anything like that, I would love to hear about it.
Yay, awesome.
Yay.
And your next book, definitely, you know, let us know, because there are so many women that I co-author with from all over the world. We can connect you with some people, you know, if you want to do like a cross-cultural thing, or it can happen, trust
Absolutely.
Me. The world is a beautiful place.
It is.
So many blessings to you and yours, and I hope that you warm up to a whopping 70 degrees. I feel real bad for you with a 65-degree temperature.
Well, thank you.
My sympathy cards are written. And I hope you have a terrific, terrific day.
You too. Thanks.
Thanks, dear. So you are listening to... I don't even know where you're listening to now. Boy, I'm awful clumped. Living and Thriving with Rusty. I'm Rusty. Today is Humpity Hump Day. We had Kelly Tonelli. I just think that's kind of fun. She could be like a rap star in her next life. She's a clinical psychologist, and she wrote a book about teenage girls and how to make them happy, or at least to give them assistance and coping skills for the transitions that they're having at that point in their life. We always transition. We're like a perpetual butterfly in a cocoon, and then we go into another cocoon, and that's just life, and it's beautiful. But she sounds like she's got a lot rocking for her, and she's got some good stuff coming up in the future. So definitely check her out. Now, let's see. For Sunday, we had some cancellations on Blog Talk and changed around some reservations. So, I'm not quite sure who's on Sunday, but I will tell you in just a moment. Let's see. All right. We have Stan Popovich. He's an author. I'm so excited about him and his work, and I just love the name Popovich. It's just a fun name. If you were to have fun with words, that would be a name to have fun with. So he has he's discovered and written a book about how to deal and cope with stress and managing the fear-based stress. So we're going to learn a little bit about managing our own fear on Sunday night at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Living and Thriving with Rusty. And until then, know that I love you. Know that you're beautiful. Know that the biggest thing that you can do to change this world is to go out there and smile. It's the best contagion ever.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.